Imagine waking up and you grab your coffee, you open up your laptop, and you suddenly realize that your brand new AI coding assistant hallucinated overnight.
Yeah.
And it ran a terminal command that just permanently deleted your entire production database.
The absolute nightmare scenario.
Right. Like, no malicious hacker, no sophisticated cyber attack at all, just a very helpful, very confused AI trying to, you know, clean up your directory. And I mean, that is literally the reality of the era we just entered.
It's a terrifying thought, honestly, but it's exactly why the entire developer ecosystem is currently undergoing this massive structural shift. We aren't just building autocomplete tools anymore.
Right. They're basically workers now.
Exactly. We are building autonomous workers. Right. And supervising workers requires a completely different tool set than just, you know, writing code.
Welcome to the Java Rubber Duck Podcast. I'm Alex. And I am an unapologetic optimist when it comes to the future of AI technology.
And I'm Jordan. I'm a pragmatic developer, which basically means my job is to figure out how to actually implement all this hyped up tech in the real world without, you know, accidentally taking down the company.
Today, we are taking you on a deep dive into the absolute bleeding edge of AI developer tools. And we're not just reading release notes here.
No, definitely not.
We are connecting the dots on how this entire ecosystem is evolving to handle autonomous coding safely. So we are going to look at three foundational pillars today.
Which are huge, by the way.
Yeah. First, how Anthropic's new Claude Sonnet 5 is giving us cheap, cloud-based reasoning. Second, how local models like Gemma 4 are achieving these just staggering speeds to give us private, hyper-specialized local execution.
Which is such a big deal for local dev.
Oh, absolutely. And finally, how Docker's new SBS platform is building the ironclad security sandboxes that we desperately need to keep these agents from, you know, destroying our machines.
It's basically the complete trifecta. You've got your cloud brains, your local muscle, and your infrastructure security.
Exactly. So let's just jump right into that first pillar. For the longest time, AI coding just meant you hit tab in your IDE, right?
Yeah, just glorified autocomplete.
Right, and a tiny model just finishes your for loop.
Yeah.
But over the last few months, and specifically looking at this release from June 30th, 2026, we have basically crossed the Rubicon from assistants into full-blown agents.
We really have.
Yeah, Anthropic just released Claude Sonnet 5, and they are planting a massive flag in this new territory.
They really are. I mean, they are explicitly billing Sonnet 5 as their most agentic Sonnet model to date. And we should probably define what agentic actually means in this context.
Yeah, because people throw that word around a lot lately.
Oh, constantly.
Yeah.
But here, we aren't talking about generating a single block of text. We are talking about a model that is trained to formulate a multi-step plan, right?
Right.
And then execute tool calls. Like, it can search a code base, it can open a web browser or run a linter in the terminal. Then it reads the output of those tools, realizes it made an error, and self-corrects.
Which, I mean, that requires a fundamentally different kind of reasoning architecture under the hood. Mm-hmm. It's not just regurgitating training data anymore. It's actual state management.
Precisely. Anthropic had to heavily optimize the model's reinforcement learning to prioritize that specific tool use and error recovery. And the benchmark results are just wild.
Yeah, I saw those.
They are reporting that Sonnet 5's agentic performance is approaching Opus 4.8 levels, and that covers reasoning, coding, and general knowledge work.
Okay, hold on, though. I need to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Sure, go for it.
If it's only approaching Opus 4.8 levels, why wouldn't a developer just use the actual Opus model? Like, if I'm letting an AI touch my code base autonomously, I want the smartest brain possible in charge, Arthur.
Well, you would think so, but it actually comes down to the physics of token pricing and how these agent loops really work in practice.
Okay, how so?
Because when an agent is working autonomously, it doesn't just read your prompts once and spit out an answer. Every single time it takes an action, say, it reads a file, it has to append that file's contents to its context window.
Oh, right.
Yeah, along with the entire history of everything it has done so far.
Yeah.
And then it has to reprocess that whole massive thing just to decide the very next step.
Oh, wow. So the context window just balloons with every single step the agent takes.
Yes, exactly. It's called context bloat. If an agent loops, say, 10 times to fix a tricky bug, it is burning through millions of tokens.
Millions. Just for one bug.
Easily. And if you do that on an Opus tier model, which is historically priced at a massive premium, a single pull request could cost you like $20 in API fees. It's economically unviable.
Which is why the pricing on Sonnet 5 is the actual headline here, I guess.
Exactly. They are keeping it at the standard Sonnet tier pricing. The intro pricing through August 31st is $2 per million input tokens and $10 per million output. And standard is 3 and 15. For development teams, that literally changes the entire architecture of how you build software.
It's like getting your senior staff engineer, you know, the Opus model to do all the grunt work, but you're only paying them an intern salary.
That is a perfect way to put it. That completely changes the math. Suddenly, giving an AI the freedom to just try a solution, fail, read the error log, and try again 5 more times isn't going to bankrupt your startup.
Right.
It lowers the barrier to entry so you, meaning the listener, can actually afford to build complex, multi-step workflows into your own projects today.
That is huge. And Sonnet 5 is the default right now for free and pro users, right? Mm-hmm. And available via Claude Code and the API.
Yep, Claude Sonnet 5.
But I do want to touch on the guardrails really quick, because Anthropic is, you know, they're notoriously strict on safety. How restricted is this thing? Because if it's genuinely agentic, I want it to be able to do basically anything I can do.
Right. Well, the safety evaluations show much lower rates of undesirable behavior, which is obviously great for standard tasks. However, its cybersecurity capabilities remain deliberately restricted compared to the Opus models.
Meaning, I can ask it to write a Python script to automate my database backups, but if I ask it to, like, actively penetration test my network architecture, it's just going to politely refuse.
That's a very fair characterization. The design philosophy here is that Sonnet 5 is your incredibly capable, cheap, everyday worker bee.
Yeah, the intern.
Right. It handles standard dev tasks autonomously, but it's not given the keys to the most sensitive dual-use security domains.
All right, let's move on to our next story. We're looking at why bigger isn't always better and how local models like Gemma 4 are getting massively faster for developers.
Yeah, so we just spent a lot of time talking about outsourcing our reasoning to a massive general-purpose API model in the cloud.
Which is great, but it's not the only way.
Exactly. There is a very vocal, very active counter movement in the developer space that is focusing entirely on local open weight models running on your own actual hardware.
And Google's Gemma 4 is currently completely stealing the spotlight here.
Oh, without a doubt.
There's this joint rollout from Llama and Hugging Face showing that Gemma 4 is now up to 3 times faster on Apple Silicon, specifically using the MLX framework. Now, for anyone who hasn't really dug into the Mac architecture, Metal is Apple's hardware-accelerated graphics and compute API, and MLX talks directly to it.
Which is a huge deal, because in the past, running open-weight models locally meant relying on these aggressive quantization formats.
Kind of compression stuff.
Yeah, which are basically just ways to mathematically compress massive models so they can physically fit into your computer's unified memory. But that compression adds processing overhead. By using MLX to talk directly to the Metal runtime, we are skipping a whole lot of that friction.
But the real magic behind this 3x speedup isn't just the hardware optimization, right? It's a technique called multi-token prediction drafters.
Yeah.
Using speculative encoding. And I absolutely love this concept because it feels like straight up sci-fi, but it's just brilliant computer science.
Let's break down why it's necessary first, because it's fascinating. Standard language model generation is agonizingly sequential. The model does billions of calculations to predict one single token, which is basically just a piece of a word.
Okay.
It outputs that token, appends it to the prompt, feeds it all back into itself, and does those billions of calculations all over again just for the very next token.
Right. So it's just a massive computational bottleneck.
Completely. Speculative decoding bypasses this by using two models simultaneously. You have a tiny, extremely fast drafter model and your main large model, in this case, Gemma 4.
Okay, two models. Got it.
Right. So the tiny drafter model looks at the prompt and rapidly guesses the next 5 or 6 tokens all at once. Then the large Gemma 4 model takes that entire sequence of guesses and verifies it mathematically in one single forward pass.
Okay, let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around this. It's kind of like when I'm typing an email and the system shows a grayed out suggestion for the next 5 words.
Yes.
If the suggestion is correct, I just hit tab and accept the whole sentence instantly instead of typing out 40 individual letters.
That is a phenomenal analogy. The tiny model is proposing that grayed out text. And if the tiny model gets it wrong, the big Gemma 4 model just rejects the bad guess, computes the correct token anyway, and just moves on.
So there's no downside.
Exactly. Mm. Because the large model is still the final authority, Google reports this delivers up to a 3x speedup with absolutely zero degradation in quality. The output is mathematically identical to standard decoding. It's just incredibly fast.
And developers are feeling this right now. Like, Alama 0.31 is using this to serve these MLX accelerated checkpoints today.
Yeah, people are already using it.
And if you look at the Aider polyglot benchmarks, Aider being a popular open source AI coding tool, and this benchmark tests how well a model codes across dozens of programming languages. They are showing up to 90% faster completion times for coding agents running locally.
Which naturally leads into the big philosophical debate happening in AI right now.
Right. I think I know where you're going with this. Because, you know, if API models like Sonnet 5 are getting so cheap and incredibly smart at general reasoning, why should I, as a developer, bother downloading a Llama?
Right.
Why manage local hardware and deal with the MLX frameworks at all? Why not just outsource everything to the cloud?
It's the ultimate build versus buy question. And there is a highly compelling research essay that was just published on Hugging Face that tackles this head on.
Oh, I read this based on the paper from earlier this year, right?
Yeah, based on a 2026 paper by Goldfeder, Wider, LeCun, and Schwartz-Eve. They argue that specialization and not just infinitely scaling up massive general-purpose brains is the actual durable path forward for AI in production.
Which flies in the face of the entire industry narrative, right? Because the narrative has always been, you know, just build a bigger brain and it will eventually do everything.
It totally does. But they look at optimization theory, biology, and organizational economics to basically show that narrower task-targeted architectures consistently outperform broad systems on specific tasks.
And they use AlphaFold as the ultimate proof of this, right?
They do. Because DeepMind didn't solve the 50-year-old grand challenge of protein structure prediction by asking a giant generalized chatbot to look at amino acids.
Right, they didn't just type it into a prompt.
Exactly. They built a highly specialized architecture, AlphaFold, trained exclusively on the spatial physics of proteins. And it revolutionized biology. The probability space of a generalized model is just too vast. It has to account for Shakespeare, Python code, and French poetry all at once.
While a specialized model only thinks about its one specific domain. So to bring this back to the listener, if you have a well-scoped, repetitive workflow, say, an agent that strictly does log classification or, I don't know, converts legacy Java code into Go, you just don't need a massive cloud API.
You really don't.
A specialized, smaller model like Gemma 4 running locally is going to give you near instant latency, zero API costs, and complete data privacy because your proprietary code never leaves your laptop.
And that latency piece was really the final hurdle. It used to be that running local models was just too sluggish for real-time coding agents. But with MLX and speculative decoding closing that latency gap, local specialized models are no longer a compromise. For certain tasks, they are literally the superior architectural choice.
Okay, shifting gears now.
Yeah.
With all these AI agents running locally and operating autonomously, we need to talk about how to stop them from accidentally deleting your entire project.
Yes. This is honestly the most critical part of this entire deep dive.
It really is.
Because whether you are bouncing API calls to Sonnet 5 or running Gemma 4 locally, the fundamental nature of our interaction with code has changed. Docker just published a fantastic explainer on this exact issue. It's about the absolute necessity of runtime isolation for AI coding agents.
This goes right back to my nightmare scenario from the intro. We are no longer just copying and pasting text from a chat window. Mm-hmm. These agents are actively executing terminal commands.
Yeah, they're modifying source files, installing node packages, and manipulating databases.
Right. And that introduces a massive foundational security risk.
Yeah.
Docker makes this point very plainly in the explainer. Developers are now in a position where they supervise AI-generated actions rather than directly controlling them.
And we really have to remember what an AI model actually is. It is not a deterministic program with strict logical boundaries. It is inherently probabilistic. It is a highly sophisticated guessing machine.
Meaning it can do catastrophic damage without any malicious intent whatsoever.
Exactly. Let's walk through a realistic scenario. Say you ask your AI agent to update your project's dependencies. The agent hallucinates a package name that just doesn't exist.
Okay, it happens all the time.
Right. But a malicious actor actually anticipated that common hallucination and squatted on that fake name in the NPM registry, uploading a package filled with malware.
Oh, wow. A classic supply chain attack.
Right. So your AI agent downloads it. If you were just running that agent directly on your Mac, that malware now has full access to your local file system. It reads your .env file, finds your AWS production keys, and quietly sends them to a server in another country. Game over.
I am sweating just thinking about that. That's horrifying. So how do we actually fix it? Because standard Docker containers aren't enough for this kind of aggressive, unpredictable runtime, are they?
No, they aren't. Standard containers share the host operating system's kernel, which leaves a slight attack surface if an agent really goes rogue. Docker's new solution is called Docker SBX, which just stands for sandboxes. It provides runtime isolation specifically designed for the chaos of agent workflows. It uses micro-VM-based protection across Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Wait, so it's literally booting up a microscopic, invisible virtual machine just for the AI?
Yes.
It's like building a padded room for an overeager intern. The AI can thrash around, accidentally delete the root directory, install malware, do whatever it wants in that padded room. And your actual laptop doesn't feel a thing.
That padded room analogy is spot on. But where Docker SBX really shines is how it handles secrets and credentials, because this is the hardest part of agentic security. If your AI agent legitimately needs to push code to a private GitHub repo, it needs authentication.
Obviously.
In the past, developers would just inject their raw GitHub API token into the container as an environment variable.
Which is terrifying, because the agent might just hallucinate and print that environment variable into a public log file.
Exactly. If the AI has the key, it means the AI can lose the key. Docker SBX solves this by using outbound network proxies right at the boundary of the micro-VM. The sandbox itself contains absolutely zero secrets.
Wait, clarify that. How does it authenticate if it doesn't actually have the secret?
So when the agent tries to make an outbound request, say a git push to GitHub, the request hits the boundary of the micro-VM. At that boundary, the proxy intercepts the request, reaches into a secure vault on your host machine, injects the necessary credential into the request header, and then sends it on its way.
Oh, that is so elegant. The AI basically says, you know, knock, knock, let me out to GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
The proxy checks the request, stamps the credential on it, and opens the door.
Yep.
So the AI never actually sees or possesses the stamp itself. Even if the AI completely loses its mind, it physically cannot leak your data password because it literally doesn't know it.
Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant security architecture. And Docker is making this super easy to deploy by introducing sandbox kits. These are reusable, runtime-enforced configurations. You have agent kits, which define the complete environment from scratch.
Like the container image,
yeah,
the networking rules, the proxy setting.
Exactly.
And I was reading about the Mixin kits, too. It feels like snapping together Lego bricks for infrastructure.
It really does. Mixin kits let you extend an existing setup. So if your company has a standard agent kit, your specific team can layer a Mixin kit right on top of it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that Mixin might install your team's specific enterprise linters, or grant access to approved internal databases, or even append an agents.md file to give the AI context on the local codebase rules.
That is incredibly powerful. This means a lead engineer can design a perfectly consistent, heavily locked down, pre-approved sandbox and distribute it to every single developer in their organization. You just pull the kit and your AI is safely contained.
We really need to internalize this paradigm shift. We have to stop treating AI coding tools as trusted pair programmers. We need to treat them as untrusted, highly capable third-party executables.
Huh?
Infrastructure level containment for AI agents is rapidly becoming as foundational to modern software development as containerization itself was for deploying web apps 10 years ago. If you aren't sandboxing your AI agents today, you are flying completely blind.
Wow. Okay, let's zoom out and look at the massive picture we've painted today. We are standing at the edge of an entirely new era of software engineering. For the heavy lifting, you can now use incredibly cheap, highly capable frontier agents like Sonnet 5 to handle complex multi-step logic without, you know, burning through your API budget.
Yeah. And when you need privacy and blistering speed, you can deploy lightning-fast, highly specialized local models like Gemma 4, running optimized on Apple Silicon via MLX.
And the glue that holds all of this together, the actual safety net, is that you can orchestrate this entire ecosystem securely using micro-VM isolation like Docker SBX. It ensures that no matter how much your AI hallucinates, your host machine and your credentials remain perfectly safe.
It is a complete mature toolkit for a radically new way of working.
It really is. And it leaves me with one final, slightly provocative thought for you to mull over as you close your IDE today.
Let's hear it.
If these AI agents become fully isolated in their own micro-VMs, perfectly specialized for narrow tasks, and entirely secure to run, will future development teams be managed less like traditional human engineering organizations and more like orchestrating massive fleets of automated microservices?
Oh, man. It's a fascinating question. The job title software engineer might look a lot more like fleet commander in a few years, managing hundreds of specialized AI workers rather than writing every line of code yourself.
It's a wild future, and it is arriving incredibly fast. We are so glad you could join us as we unpack it all.
Thank you for listening to this deep dive, and we will catch you next time on the Jobber Rubber Duck podcast. Keep building, and seriously, keep your agents sandboxed.